We'll figure that out. Babu, babu, babab.
That's what they say, Wendy. And then they're locked up. The key is thrown away. Earlier in the show, you and I were discussing the fact that we are now in the throes of March Madness, and people like to fill out their brackets, and people like to predict what will happen in the NCAA tournament.
Northwestern takes on Vanderbilt today about 3:30-ish.
Yeah, right in there. But then, I said this to Mark Harmon, I said, Mark, in the history of people filling out brackets, so that's hundreds of thousands or probably millions of people who have filled out brackets, tell everybody how many times they've gotten it all correct, and that answer is zero. Nobody has ever, ever, ever done this 100% correct.
But then, if you recall, a listener called in and said, I heard about this DePaul math professor whose name is Jeff Bergen, and he said there's a less than 1 in 9.2 quintillion chance to get it perfect. So we have that DePaul math professor on the line with us right now, Jeff Bergen, because I want to know what the heck a quintillion is.
Well, thank you for having me. Yes, I'm the Debbie Downer who said there's only a 1 in 9 quintillion chance. But on the bright side, that shouldn't prevent you from having lots and lots of fun, and maybe you can still win your bracket even if you're not perfect. But let me tell you what a quintillion is.
Can I guess? Quintillion means, if my number sequencing is correct, and I know, Jeff, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, it goes millions, then billions, then trillions, then quadrillions, then quintillions. Is that correct?
Right. If you're up to 18 zeros, you're up to a quintillion. Now this is actually, when people started asking me about the bracket, a name that I didn't know. Actually, my wife let me in on the name because she showed me a book that she was using when she was running a math club for middle school students. And so that's where I actually learned about the word quintillion.
So you're both in the math field.
Right. So she's a retired teacher, and I'm still a teacher.
So who balances the checkbook? Do you fight over that?
She lets me do that because that's about the only thing I do around the house. She does all the hard stuff.
That's fair. That's fair. All right, so let's figure out how we've come to that number, 1 in 9.2 quintillion. It's because of all, obviously, it's because of all the different possibilities of who could beat who throughout the steps of the tournament, right?
Right. So when we say 1 in 9 quintillion, that's not the odds if you know something about basketball. For that, you have lots of people that have different guesses. But if you're guessing what's going to happen in each game, there are 63 games to predict. So 63 times in a row, there's a 1 out of 2 chance that you're going to be right. But again, that's the same thing as saying, well, what happens if I flip a coin 63 times in a row? What's the chances of getting ahead? Well,
50-50.
Well, it's 50-50, but then you have to take 50-50 or one half and multiply 63 copies of it. So, so where the 9th quintillion number comes from is you take 2. If you had to guess 2 games, it would be 2 times 2. If you had to guess 3 games, it would be 2 times 2 times 2. If you have to guess 63 games, it's 2 times 2 times 2 63 times. Well, you can just say 2 to the 63rd. That's not a big deal. But then when you plug 2 to the 63rd into your calculator, you get a 9 followed by 18 zeros.
Jeez. I don't have a calculator that big.
Oh, sure you do. You just have to be able to read the scientific notation.
I can't.
That means no. That's a polite way that Jeff just threw the word no at us.
I have no real sense of how big a quintillion is, which is why, again, with my handy little pocket calculator, I sort of come up with lots and lots of ways of coming up with things that are equally difficult or even easier. So if I can give you some examples.
We'd love those.
Please.
Okay, to just get through the first round, so that's the Thursday and Friday, and that's when everybody's taking off work and watching the games on their computer and so on and so on. To get those 32 games by guessing, your chances are about 1 in 4 billion. That's about 15 times harder than winning the lottery with one ticket.
Yeah.
Now, if you get through the first 32 games, you have 31 games to go. To get the next 31 games, by guessing, your chances are about 1 in 2 billion. That's about 8 times harder than winning the lottery with just one ticket. So, in order to guess a perfect bracket, what you have to do is harder, or actually 100 times harder, than winning the lottery 2 times in a row, buying one ticket each time.
This is next to impossible.
It is impossible, isn't it? Will anyone ever do it, do you think?
I, By guessing, I don't think it'll ever happen. I mean, you know, for a couple of other ways to try to imagine how big 9 quintillion is, if everybody on the planet, all 7 billion of us, started filling out brackets, and we filled them out at about one bracket per minute,
yeah. So
that's predicting about one game per second. If we all kept doing this, it would take us over 2,500 years to fill out 9 quintillion brackets.
Wow.
And then if you took all those brackets and piled them on top of each other, I mean, not end to end, but piling them on top of each other,
yeah.
They would stretch from here to the sun and back more than 3,000 times.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
Yeah, so this is really a number which is beyond comprehension. And even though you're pretending to be intimidated by these numbers,
yeah.
let's keep in mind that although the numbers are big, these are really pretty straightforward calculations that can be taught in any high school in the country. And to get the answers, you just do some fairly simple math and let the calculator do the hard stuff. But the ideas are simple. It's just the numbers are so large that's what's intimidating. But that should not stand in the way of really enjoying the games and watching them with your family and friends and work colleagues and so on.
All right, you're a DePaul math professor. His name is Jeff Bergen, and I know you're busy this week. How many interviews have you done today already?
You are the first.
Oh my gosh!
Out of 9.2 quintillion, we are the first.
You are indeed the first. See, don't you feel like you've won the lottery?
Yes. Kind of,
yeah, we do.
Our chances of getting you on as a guest to be the first guest is better than picking even two of the brackets.
Yeah.
I don't know what I've just done with that formula.
Well, you did the really difficult thing. You asked. And I think that's what it takes.
So when the numbers are that outrageous, Jeff, the fact that somebody may have some knowledge in terms of picking, if you're a good handicapper of sports, when the numbers are that outrageous, it really doesn't figure in at all, does it? They don't stand much of a better chance, do they?
Well, it depends how you look at it. I would put the chances, if you have knowledge of basketball, sort of a historic knowledge of how 1 versus 16s and 2 versus 15s, how they do historically, I put your chances at 1 in 128 billion.
Hmm.
Now, 1 in 128 billion is one heck of a lot easier than 1 in 9 quintillion, but it's still many, many, many times harder than winning the lottery. So if there's a tournament with relatively few upsets, there's an outside shot that someone might eventually get it.
Right, right.
Not in our lifetime,
though.
No,
probably not.
Well, you know, if I had to guess, I would guess that in our lifetime, no one's going to get a perfect bracket. But again, I don't want to be that academic Debbie Downer guy. I want to encourage people to have fun with it.
Sure.
You have just encouraged me to go play the Powerball because my chances of winning that are way better.
You know, if that gives you a bit of a buzz for a few minutes, it's worth the money that you spend.
Jeff, since you know numbers so well and since you mentioned the lottery, I want to run this past you. I want you to prove me right on something. I've talked to people. Let's say, this is hypothetical, but let's say your odds of winning the lottery are 1 in 10 million. I know that's not the exact number, but let's say that they are. I know guys who will buy a ticket, and then they'll say, you know what, I'm going to buy a second ticket because that will double my chances. But it doesn't double your chances. It gives you a 2 in 10 million chance. It doesn't double your chances, does it?
It does.
Well, yeah, it gives you two chances instead of one.
I mean, if everything you said is right except the conclusion. So if it was 1 in 10 million and then you bought two tickets, it would be 2 in 10. Assuming you're buying a different set of numbers the second time, which I'm sure you certainly are. But, I mean, 2 in 10 million is indeed twice 1 in 10 million. So it really, it does double your odds.
You just said that.
But it doesn't make you, it doesn't give you a 1 in 5 million chance, then does it? It gives you a 2. It's different being 2 in 10 million and 1 in 5 million. You follow me on that, right?
Well, I follow you, except I hate to tell the co-host.
No, that's all right.
No.
Wrong, tell me
he thinks
wrong.
He's a mathematician.
But 1 in 5 million is the same as 2 in 10 million.
He is. Listen, can I just tell you, you have been a math professor at DePaul for, what, 30-some years, almost 40 years?
36 years.
36 years.
I'm just getting started. I want to do it till I get it right.
Okay. Well, Bill is doubting you 100%
right
now. No,
if you tell me that, I'll believe you. But I don't think it doubles your chances. I think it gives you two chances out of 10 million, which is different from 1 in 5 million.
Bill, are you saying that you're entitled to your own facts and your alternative
yes.
views?
That's
what you're telling me.
I just am confused because you said, okay, everybody says I have a 1 in 10 million chance, but now I have a 2 million in 10 million chance. That is double your chances.
I don't know how to illustrate the point better. No, but but you know your math. So if you tell me that,
okay,
I will.
Well, Bill, how about if I do it this way?
Yeah.
If 10 million people, if you bought, suppose that there are 10 million different possibilities.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you bought 10 million different tickets. What are your chances of winning?
100%.
Right, 10 million out of 10 million.
How are you not sure of that?
Wouldn't you have to?
Oh my God.
All right, let's go with again the theory that it's 1 in 10 million. Wouldn't you have to buy 5 million tickets to cut that in half?
No.
You wouldn't?
If you buy 5 million tickets, you've cut the odds to being one half.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Odds are different than your chance of winning,
okay,
though, isn't
in
it?
Other words, your first question is if you go from one ticket to two tickets, have you doubled your chances?
Right.
And the answer is yes.
Well, all right.
Then you can ask the question, how many tickets do I have to buy until I have a 50% chance of winning?
Okay, that's what I meant.
So, in essence, you're both right.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess we're. Thank you, Kim, for being very diplomatic.
No, I think
I'm wording it wrong.
Professor Jeff Bergen is
right. That's why it's good to have a woman there, because then she can actually tell you what you meant to say.
If you knew
Kim
how
Gordon
bad I am with numbers, you would be cracking up that I even said that.
But to make your chances 1 in 10 million to 1 in 5 million, you would literally have to buy half that amount of tickets to make it 1 in 5. You'd have to buy 5 million tickets, not a second ticket, to double your chances.
You know what? You just flipped it again.
Oh,
you're not understanding this, nor am I. That's why I'm on break.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Well, look at this. Suppose you had a very simple lottery.
Yes.
All you have to do is pick heads or tails.
Yes.
Okay. That's all you have to do. So all you have to do is pick heads or tails. If you buy one ticket and you say heads, you have a 1 out of 2 chance of winning.
Right.
If you pick a second ticket and you tails, you're going to have a 2 out of 2 chance of winning.
So you're going to win.
100%.
Right. I agree with that.
So, I mean, you do agree that 2 out of 2 is the same as 1. I mean, you can reduce.
Right.
You are allowed to reduce that fraction.
Right.
So 2 out of 1 million reduces to the same fraction as 1 out of 5 million.
Okay, I'm online trying to find the state that has a lottery where you just have to pick heads or tails. That's the lottery I want to play.
You know, it's funny. There were a bunch of, I think, mathematics grad students at MIT who noticed that there was kind of a flaw in the Massachusetts lottery system. And the way they ran the carryovers, they actually figured out a way to beat the system. Now, the state was still making money, but the way the rollovers were distributed, they were actually able to make money off the lottery until the lottery found out about this and they changed their rules.
Oh, no.
But you know, if you can find yourself some MIT grad students, you know, and go to Massachusetts under the old rules, that's the lottery for you.
I like it. All right.
Professor Bergen, I have to ask you what it feels like to teach a student who just doesn't grasp it, because that is what is happening right now with Bill. You're still shaking your head like you don't believe him.
I must be wording it wrong. I know you know what I'm trying to ask you, though, right?
Am I allowed to plead the Fifth Amendment on the
yes,
radio?
You can. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Or if I do it twice, is that the Tenth Amendment?
All right. See, now I'm so very confused, but that was very funny. But you do double your chances of winning if you buy two different numbers.
Unless you're silly enough to buy the same number both times.
Oh, all right.
Now, can you put this to rest, or are you going to not believe this?
I do believe it, but I don't think I'm getting my point across properly. I understand what you're saying, Jeff, 100%. I really do. But I'm just saying you're only increasing your chances in that lottery by one ticket. You're not doubling your chances specifically. You're only adding a second ticket to all the tickets that are out there. You know what I mean by that, don't you?
But your chances of winning have nothing to do with the other tickets out there. Whether
right.
you split the pot has to do with the other tickets out there.
All right.
Okay. Can I give you one more example?
Yes.
Okay. You're going to roll a die.
Yes.
So that can come up 1 through 6.
Right.
Okay. What number do you like? You're going to predict it.
4.
Pick it. 4. Okay.
4.
If you pick 4, what are your chances of winning?
1 out of 6.
Now, pick 2 numbers.
4 and 5.
If you pick 4 and 5, what's your chance of winning?
One in three.
Okay.
Which is two out of six.
Which is two out of six.
Yeah.
But in other words, your first ticket was a four, and your second ticket was a five. By buying your second ticket, you doubled your one out of six to become two out of six. Same thing with doubling one over a million.
But in all these examples, we're using
over 10 million.
But in these examples, we're using small numbers. We're using one out of two for a coin or one out of six for a dice. If the number is so great, like a lottery ticket, we said 10 million as a hypothetical, it really doesn't have that big of an impact. Picking two tickets to make an impact, you'd have to buy half the tickets.
Okay, I'm going to say something nice. I'm going to kill my reputation.
Go on.
What you mean to say
is
if you have something which is infinitesimally small, without us giving a formal definition of infinitesimal, but if you have something which is infinitesimally small and you double it, it's still incredibly small.
Right.
Except it's twice as big. So if your point of saying is if you have a 1 in 10 million chance, you have almost no chance of winning.
Right.
If you have a 2 in 10 million chance, you still almost have no chance of winning. That's a true statement.
But you still have doubled your...
But are still twice as good.
Yeah.
Right. That's the part I'm saying wrong, is I get the part you've doubled it, but I'm still saying you haven't made an impact because the number is so great.
You're arguing with a math professor?
Okay,
seriously?
I'm going to get my red pen out here, and I'm going to give you some partial credit for that.
All right, thank you. That's all I want.
Okay.
So have you agreed to disagree, or Bill's just not wording it correctly?
I know for a fact Professor Bergen is right. I'm just saying when your number is that huge, buying a second ticket isn't really increasing your chances enough to make a difference.
Okay.
Unless
so Wendy, since Bill's not listening, when I'm giving him partial credit now,
give it all to me.
I will take
10
it.
Million. So how's that?
All right. Perfect.
I'll take it.
Okay. So.
Jeff, thank you. We appreciate this.
You'll never be on with us again.
No.
Although, can I just tell you next year when we talk to you again about the March Madness, because it seems like that's the busiest week of your year, Bill's going to bring this up again. I guarantee you this.
I'm calling you at home, Jeff.
What are the chances? The odds are pretty good.
Well, being that you just did, I guess it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, I'll talk to you during the game. I'll call you during the game.
It is a pleasure talking to you.
You know, here's what you should do. You know when you should call me? When the DePaul men are playing. How's that?
All right, that's fair. That'll be soon.
Although, you know what? You can call when the DePaul women are playing, because that is going to happen very soon.
I hope it does.
He's DePaul math professor Jeff Bergen. It was highly enjoyable for me, not probably so much for you, Jeff.
It was for me.
Because you think you're right.
You're going for punishment, aren't you?
Jeff, thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Right. Thanks very much.
That's
we
Professor
appreciate
Bergen.
It.
I got partial credit.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I think so.
He gave you partial credit to be nice.
I'm used to that.
All right, we have to take a quick break. And then Kim Gordon is here. We're going to do some news, and then we'll talk about odds, and we'll roll dice. Well, let's play Yahtzee for the second half of the show.
All Yahtzee, second half, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim Gordon. All right.
I want to apologize very quickly. I didn't want to spend all of our time with the professor talking about my math hypothesis. I didn't. You know what happened? Usually when we come up here and we do the stream show, we talk to this listener, Matt, and it sets me at ease, and we didn't talk to him today, and everything's off kilter because of that.
What were the chances he was going to call?
One in 9.2 quintillion.
Hey, Matt, will you talk to Bill and calm his nerves?
Matt, I needed to hear your voice.
Well, I'll say that I'm actually calling to teach you both about quantum physics.
Oh, good.
Hey, I'm not involved in this. Yeah. I listen to professors. Bill argues with them.
That wasn't an argument.
No.
It was a friendly discussion.
I received my Wendy T-shirt, and I'm seriously debating on whether I should wear it or not, because I know Wendy just doesn't like me.
Listen, Matt, I totally like you, and now we have to talk to you each and every day this week. But starting next week, there's a new person that wants to be the Matt of the show.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you about that. How about I only call on Mondays and Fridays?
That seems fair. That seems equitable. Matt, I could have you on every day.
I'll give you Bill's home phone number.
Call me at the house.
You can call him at the house. Matt, I totally like you, and I'm glad you got a payback as a Wendy shirt, but see, I'm living up to the shirt.
Oh, no, you're fine. Bill Show. In all honesty, you guys are fantastic. Bill, I have never met anybody as challenged as me when it comes to math.
Thank you.
You haven't met me.
So I will tell you that in eighth grade, I had such problems with math that they actually pulled me out of math class every single day and sat me down with a private tutor for an hour. That was very helpful to a kid who was socially awkward to get pulled out of class.
Sure.
Not speak to everybody except for the tutor, who sat in a room with no lights on because she had chronic migraines.
Oh, no.
But, it was great. I did actually grasp, I think, what the professor was speaking about, and I came up with the conclusion that this is another reason why I don't watch college basketball.
I'm so with you.
Well, Matt, thank you for the call. Yeah. We'll talk to you one more time tomorrow, and we're glad you got your shirt.
Thank you, folks.
All right, take care.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
That's Matt, our first caller for the week.
You're just encouraging him. Hi, Harold.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I don't know if anybody's explained to Bill. But 1 + 1 = 2.
Hold on. I'm taking notes. Hold on, Harold.
As much.
1 + 1 = 2. Okay, go on.
So that doubles your chances.
I know, but I don't.
I think what you're thinking, Bill.
Yes.
I think what you're thinking is this. Let's say you get a coin and you flip it.
Right.
10 times.
Yes.
And it comes up head. First time, the second time, the third time, and the fourth time. And all the way to 9 times. And you go, well, what's it going to come up next time? And you go, well,
still a 50-50 chance. I get that.
Right. To me, that's what you're thinking, but yeah, no, you're doubling it. You're doubling it. Your chances. It's still, you got a 1 in 5 million. That's still not gonna, good luck with that.
All right.
So you're looking at probability.
Probability.
That is the difference.
Yeah.
That's different than your chance. I don't know.
I don't want to delve in. I know.
I just wanted it to be
a simple question and answer. I didn't want it to go on for 35 minutes.
Yeah, but you won't take his answer. He's a math professor, and he said you do double your chances, and you're like, no, I don't believe that. So I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just going
to
say it one more time. Is Harold still there?
Yeah, Harold.
Harold, stay for this part. I'm just saying, if you're talking about a coin, you have a 1 in 2 chance. If you're talking about a dice, it's a 1 in 6 chance. So I get it. You're doubling your chances. I believe that. And if you go to the lottery, you're still doubling your chances. But I'm saying if you have 10 million possibilities as opposed to just 2 or 6, it doesn't really make that big of a difference if you bought two lottery tickets.
Yeah, but that's not the point. If it matters or it doesn't, the fact is you're still doubling your chances.
No, I gave into that. I worded that incorrectly at the beginning. You are doubling your chances. I give into that part. But I'm saying if you're investing in the lottery and you bought 2 tickets as opposed to 1 and you think, wow, now my chances are so much greater, they're not.
No.
They're not.
No,
it's a little bit greater. Hey, I ask you a question. You got a glass.
I have a what?
You have a glass and it's got water in it.
Yes.
The water goes up to the midway point.
Yes.
Is it half full or half empty?
Both.
Oh my God! I'm going to ram my head into the wall. That's what I'm going to do.
You got a glass that's twice as big as it needs to be.
Right.
Such a big glass. I think.
All right. Well, thank you, Harold.
I've lost all my ability to laugh. That's what I have.
Right. Wait, who's on first?
Thank you, Harold.
Don't, Kevin. Don't.
I know what you mean, but even if you were proven wrong, you have this theory because this has bothered you for years where people say, I'm doubling my chances if I get 2 tickets. And it bugs you when they say that.
Because
I think it's because you're a former gambler and
you
know about the chances of gambling. And
right.
How difficult it is to win.
Right.
And I think that's what's hanging you up.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
So how do we get this last 40 minutes back? Can we take a break?
Yes. A break.
Can
and then,
I cool you down? Can I get you a half full glass
and
of water?
And we're going to get Wendy a helmet while she beats her head against the wall.
All right. Helmets and water for everybody. Stick around. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are on the stream. You have a 2 in 5 chance of finding us on the stream. If you go to our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, there will be a link that will direct you right to the stream. And come join us. Kim Gordon's here hanging out.
In the cold clubhouse today. It's freezing in here.
It's a little brisk today.
Yeah.
It is chilly. I have my coat on, and I know people
say... Well, it is a basement, right? So it's always colder in the basement?
Yeah.
It is always colder in the basement.
The only basement located on the 7th floor anywhere in the world.
With
the
windows.
The magic of radio. I know.
But people commented, can't you take off your coat and stay a while? It's cold in here.
Yeah, it is. Very cold in here. And I have on a tank top and a sweater. And I'm
oh. Something for the college kids to enjoy. It's spring break. Earlier, we had on an author discussing Charlton Heston, the work of Charlton Heston. And before the show, we were finding a quote from Planet of the Apes for Charlton Heston. And I have to admit, as big of a Charlton Heston fan as I am, I always said the quote wrong. It's, "Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty apes." But
what,
I always
what
left
did you
out,
say, though?
I always thought it was just, "Get your paws off me, you apes." But I was wrong.
You said damn dirty.
I said, well, when the guest was on, I did. But before the show, I was trying to find the quote, and I was getting a little bit wrong.
I thought that was Ten Commandments.
He also says in the Ten Commandments, Kim. He says it in Omega Man. He says it in Ben-Hur. He says that line in every movie. I have found other movie quotes that most of us are saying wrong. Can I share them with you?
Please.
You know, in Empire Strikes Back, the quote that everybody says, "Luke, I am your father."
That's a fallacy.
Doesn't say it.
What is it?
Do you know what he says?
He says... I can't remember what it is.
It's close. It's not, "Luke, I am your father." He just says, "No, I am your father." He does not say Luke, but that's the one that's often said. The line, the most famous line from Casablanca, the line that everybody says all the time when quoting the great Humphrey Bogart movie Casablanca is, "Play it again, Sam." He says that to the piano player. That's never said in the movie.
Hey, play that one again. What is it?
Very close. He says, "Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by."
Oh, that stinks. Wow.
A little clunky.
I like the fake one.
Yeah, me too.
A little clunky. In Apollo 13, the most famous line from the movie Apollo 13 and at Whitney Houston's house was, "Houston, we got a problem."
A lot of problems. She had a lot of problems.
It's close.
That's not fair to drag her into
Houston,
that.
Houston, we have a problem.
I never heard "Houston, we got a problem." It's always been, "Houston, we have a problem."
Yeah. So
who said we got a problem?
That's the one where, you know, the kids, the impressionists, Wendy.
Those
that's what they said. The millennials.
That's improper English, though. You would have to say, "We have got a problem."
And if you work at NASA, you probably can speak correct grammar.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. You would imagine. "Mommy Dearest," the Joan Crawford line, "No more wire hangers." The four words that sum up that movie perfectly.
The real line?
The real line.
Ouch.
Yes, it's ouch. And then parenthetically, it's, "No wire hangers ever." Now, nobody who
even
ever
worse.
Quotes that. Right. But nobody who ever quotes that movie does it correctly. They always say, "No more wire hangers." Incorrect. Wrong. They mentioned the Planet of the Apes one on the list.
And what, now I swear to God, I thought you said it correct. I heard you say, "Keep your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape."
When we did it on air, that's what I said. But before the show, before you got here, when Kevin and I were looking for the quote, I said it's, and it's on here, "Take your paws off me, you damn dirty apes," but it's, "Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty apes."
Oh.
So very, very close. You know the line in Jaws, "We're going to need a bigger boat." Never said in the movie.
Chomp.
You're going
to. That was the real line.
Right. "You're going to need a bigger boat." So
nom, 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 nom.
Is said in there. Harry Orwell. Not Harry Orwell. Dirty Harry. Sorry.
Is that George's younger brother?
George's brother. No, Harry Orwell was
from... He was born in 1964.
Remember the show Harry O?
With
David
yes,
Jansen?
Yes.
His name was Harry Orwell. That's where I got that.
I don't want to be inside your brain. Why are you sharing this with us?
I just
We've like, just gotten a little look into Bill's head, and I don't like it.
It's Harry Orwell from Harry O, but he never said this. It was Clint Eastwood in the Dirty Harry movies. "Do you feel lucky, punk?" Never said it. What he actually says is, "Being as this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?" So that is another one often misquoted.
That's a paraphrase. That's
close
enough.
And didn't they never say, and I forget the name of the movie, "You dirty rat"? Wasn't that never
James
in the
Cagney?
Movie?
James Cagney?
Yeah.
"You dirty rat, you killed my brother."
I think that's another one.
I think he says in Little Caesar, I think, which is the movie about the pizza franchise.
Right.
I think he says, I think Cagney says, "You dirty rat."
I thought he didn't.
No?
The pizza franchise.
You know, Chuck E. Cheese?
No, Little Caesars, the movie.
Because isn't Chuck E. Cheese a rat?
Yeah. He is. Yeah.
Well, is he a mouse? I mean, would you want to go to a pizza place and be fed
they
by
use
a rat?
That as a logo?
That's a good point, Kim.
Field of Dreams, the line, "If you build it, they will come." Mm-mm. "If you build it, he will come."
Who's
is
he?
The actual line.
The natural.
The natural in Field of Dreams.
Don't you think like Harry sometimes Orwell they is. Add in a name like Luke, I am your father, so when you go and you repeat it, you know who you're referring to?
It's more recognizable.
Yeah.
That's the reason. That's the
absolute reason.
Wouldn't
you want to be the one who was misquoted and started the misquotes?
Yes.
I would love that recognition. Yes. Like, I was the one who originally said, Luke, I am your father, and it wasn't it. But wouldn't you want that recognition?
That would be a great, yeah.
But how would you know that was you? Because somebody else in Iowa could have said it, too.
Oh.
Because whoever blogged it first right. gets the credit
gets
for it.
Gets
you
the
know,
cred.
Remember, like, when Impressionists used to do an impression of Cary Grant, they would always go, Judy. He never said that in any movie.
What?
He never said
Tell
that
Tell Judy Pilak that.
He used to say it when he called Judy Pilak's house. He would say that. She had to have a restraining order against Cary Grant. I'm not supposed to say that on air, though.
She's out of town. Who cares?
Yeah, she's in Mexico.
In The Graduate.
Not working.
Drinking tequila.
The line that Benjamin says to Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson? Actual misquote. The real line, Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me, aren't you? But for
okay,
some reason.
Just quibbling.
It's word,
that's
yeah.
semantics.
This one I was dead wrong on in Wall Street. Gordon Gekko's line, greed is good. He never says that.
What does he say?
He says, the point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
So somebody just shortened that down.
Somebody, yeah. Yep. And I've got one more. Would you like to hear it?
Did Rhett Butler really say, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn?
He does say
okay,
that.
Good.
He does say that. That's legit. In The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy's line. Oh, no, the professor. I'm sorry. The wizard says this.
Are we on Gilligan's Island?
He just went there in his mind. Did you see that happen? It was really cute.
There was a scene in The Wizard of Oz where the professor and Marianne are in the middle of the scene. It's awkward. We're not in Kansas. Oh, no, Dorothy does say this. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore.
That's the actual quote?
No, that's what people have said when they remember the scene in the movie. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. I don't think we're in Kansas. The line is actually, Toto, I've got a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. So very close, but still a misquote.
I thought it was Toto. Darn it, I stepped in it.
Nobody says that in Wizard of Oz. You're making a mockery of the Wizard of Oz.
I am not.
Did All you right. ever see The Wizard of Oz? If you didn't see The Sound of Music, I
No, Wizard of Oz was one of those movies that we watched every year. What holiday was it on?
I felt like it was always on around spring break.
Yeah.
Tornado season, of course.
It totally was. And I told Bill this story, and I've said it on the radio for many years, so now I'll say it on the stream. For some reason, my father would leave one of those big lollipops behind the toaster. I know this sounds crazy.
No,
I know there
all.
Was a lollipop guild, and I know yeah. that's... I just figured out, I think you explained to me 40 years later, that that's why he left a lollipop for me.
Why did you think he was leaving a giant lollipop?
I didn't really make the connection. I don't know, and I don't know why it was behind the toaster.
You're
and,
leaving out a major component for Kim. Wendy's father was the mayor of Munchkinland. You need to know that to appreciate this.
Wow, and you're so tall.
But I don't think it was actually I don't think it was meant to be left behind the toaster. I think I found it behind the toaster, and that's like he was hiding it so he could give it to me during the movie, and that's the memory I have since he died when I was 10. I just put
that
two
only
and
happened
together.
Once though, right? That didn't happen
really
every year.
I don't really recall. I've blocked a lot of my childhood out.
Why behind the toaster? There
I
must have been better
you might
hiding
have
place.
It was a good hiding spot.
Maybe.
Because unless you're making toast, who looks behind a toaster?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
And it wasn't breakfast time.
But it was that big that it would
yes.
pop out.
A double toaster. Yes.
Wow. Did yeah. it when you enjoyed the lollipop later, did it have toast residue? Was there
no,
little toast
no crumbs.
Crumbs? Nothing?
But, you know, lollipops are one of those things that they look really enticing, but
they're not
that good.
The only yeah. thing I like is a good blow pop because you get the gum.
Those are,
the
yeah, there's a reward.
Yeah.
Yep. Remember when if you went to, like, a hardware store, I don't know why I equate this with hardware stores.
Because a toaster.
Well, maybe that's why. But they always had something near the checkout that was a bunch of jars with just those candy sticks.
Oh, yeah.
Like various flavors.
Those Stuckies when you were on the road.
Yeah, Stuckies had those.
I know
those.
Exactly what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Like a candy cane without the...
With no twist at the top.
Right, but yeah. they were... Different colors for
yeah.
different flavors.
They weren't good either.
No. They were never great, but your better places, like the Ace Hardware in Oak Forest, had like...
Your better
where's
places.
The bell? Your better candy stick places.
That's better than a Stuckies.
They had an assortment. Because like, I remember like some of the flavors, my brother would look at me and he'd go, what does sassafras taste
right.
like? And I go,
root beer.
Get one. Yeah, it is kind of a root beer.
That's what it is.
But they had really off-brand... Like,
they did banana.
Yeah. Not just your standard
watermelon.
Flavors. always a watermelon.
Which was
a
pink green and apple. Green stripe.
Yes. Right. You're like the rind kind of thing. Yeah. All right. We have to take a really quick break here.
Nope. I'm not doing it.
Because the odds of us not having a show tomorrow.
No, don't bring math into it. All right. A quick break and then more show. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wait, so Steve Cochran, thank you. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder finishing up day four of our web series, webisodes. It's not?
I thought it was. I guess it is.
It kind of is. People are texting us at 312-591, no, I'm sorry, 981-7200. I shouldn't use numbers at all, Wendy. I just realized no more numbers on the show. Now, it's interesting that they're texting us because you're not supposed to. We don't have a dedicated text line as of this moment. So Steve Bertrand, who's downstairs in the showcase studio, is getting these same texts and is baffled by all of them. 847 says, if Chance the Rapper buys lottery tickets, does that increase your chances? That's an interesting question.
He gets an extra chance.
Because his name is Chance?
I think that's how it works.
So does former Major League pitcher Dean Chance. Same deal with him. They want to know over at 331 if we remember, if you and I remember back when you could go to the hardware store and have your tubes tested. I don't think that's a medical question. I think that refers to your TV tubes.
Your picture tubes.
Right. The Osco Drug By Me, when I was growing up, had a giant section in the back where you would line up your TV tubes and then put them in a machine and put a quarter in and hit a button, and they would either light up or not light up.
And you'd get a fortune?
Yeah, you'd get a fortune. I would just sit there and watch people test their TV tubes for a while. That was fun.
It did look much like those old-time fortune tellers where bulbs would light up.
Zoltar.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it looked like the Zoltar machine.
I don't know that we ever got our tubes tested.
Oh.
I was on the pill.
Another reason for people to complain. You just gave them another reason for people to complain.
I don't even care. I don't care.
But what, I mean, so TVs still have tubes, but do they no longer need to be tested?
There are no
tubes. There's
no
more tubes in TVs anymore?
Although, I will talk musicians. Kevin is a musician.
That's correct.
And my son, Michael, only wanted a tube amplifier.
Tube amps are the best amps.
And tube amps, you have to be more careful with them because there are tubes in there, but when those go out, you just replace the tube. They're heavier.
Yeah.
But isn't that like the old picture tube? It's like not solid state.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, there's different ones you go through, but some of them are like, you know, huge, like the size of, I don't know, even like a remote control. Maybe that's a little dramatic, but some are the size of like little light bulbs. And some
right.
That's exactly like the ones I remember that people have tested were almost light bulb looking.
Right. A little elongated.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, so they still make tube amps, but I don't think they make tube televisions anymore.
I don't think so. Well, TVs are like an eighth of the weight, if that, of what they used to be. So, yeah, there's no way there's
tubes. Oh, right, because they're so thin now, you couldn't fit a tube in there.
But the whole process, like the machine and people putting in it and then the lights lighting up, look like, remember, like, if you watched a TV show from the 60s and it's supposed to look futuristic, like the time tunnel or Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, there was always a room with guys in front of panels hitting buttons and things would light up.
Yes.
That's what the future's going to look like. That's what this machine looked like.
And Mr. Smith, or Dr. Smith, what was his robot called?
Just robot on Lost in Space.
Yeah, because didn't he have a light bulb? Which
was he Tubi?
Yeah, kind of Tubi.
That wasn't his name?
No, Tubi the robot. You're being ridiculous.
But he had a light bulb for a brain and plier hands.
Right.
Not Dave Plyer.
Like Dave Plyer's hands.
Kind of.
Yeah, futuristic.
He has tiny hands.
He does, doesn't he? That's episode 4 of our webisode, Bill and Wendy, on the WGN Network. We want to thank all of our affiliates across the country for listening. We want to thank CLTV for ignoring Wendy and myself and refusing to put us on your airwaves. I don't blame you. We'll be back tomorrow. No numbers Friday. That's a feature we do. We don't do any mathematical calculations at all on Friday.
Tomorrow's Friday already?
Tomorrow's Friday.
Is that the best day ever invented?
The best day ever invented, both in real radio and on the web, where only specific people can listen. So if you're one of those people, enjoy us tomorrow. It's Bill and Wendy signing off.
What's next, Bill?
Nothing.
You just made me do a spit take.
You did. You're like Danny Thomas. I feel like I just told you that Uncle Tanoose was coming for a visit.
Is that who's next?
Listen next as Uncle Tanoose comes for a visit on most of these WGN networks. I'm tugging on my ear so Carol Burnett's aunt knows I'm okay.
You don't even need me today, quite honestly. I'll take tomorrow off.
All right. No, so come back tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Later.